Hey, church at noon. Happy New Year's. I love 2016 already. It's a good year. Believe it or not, I have been with you all for another full year cycle, 2.5 years. And I know some of you are like, oh, that's really? It seemed way longer than that. And some of you are like, oh, he's still wet behind the ears. But yeah, 2.5 years, and this is the community. You guys are the community that I love. I love being a part of this particular expression of the body of Christ. So thanks for being great. You're pretty neat. So iPhone users, I hope that none of you all experienced something like this right around the time of New Year's. One of your New Year's texts went out like this young lady's. Are you coming to my New Year's party? Of course, says Bill K. I'll be there. Oh, cool, because I'm going to kill you at midnight. On second thought, maybe I won't go, haha, I meant kiss you at midnight. Sorry. Hello? No response. Autocorrect can ruin lives. It's true. Choosing the right word can be pretty key. So it would be a tragedy if you showed up to church one Saturday and instead of complimentary coffee, it was complimentary, which meant, I don't know if that means you have to give a compliment or when you get your coffee, you receive a compliment, but it was no longer free in some way. You had to do something. The right word can be key. So man, boy, sometimes they're interchangeable, but waterman is a really obscure comic dude. Water boy was my position on the high school basketball team, and they're not interchangeable in every situation. Woman and lady, seems like they're pretty much equal, but Catwoman, once again, superhero villain. Cat lady, my Aunt Janine, love her to death, can't go to her house though, my insides get itchy. If you are ever in need of a quick $50 and you don't mind the hassle of getting your car towed, there you go. Some of you see it. Just ask somebody that's sitting near you who sees it. You'll find $50. Sweet. Choosing the right word can be essential. Did anybody see the new Star Trek movie? You didn't hear me. He said yes. You can't mess that up. You gotta have the right word in there. It's just one word, but you gotta have the right word. John says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word was with God in the beginning. Everything came into being through the Word, and without the Word, nothing came into being. What came into the Word through the... He says Word like 50 times in the first few verses. Word, 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 Word. And no, I'm not gonna put you through a sermon where my main point is, words are important. You got to choose the right word. Choose Jesus or else. I'm not going to put you through that. Hopefully I have something a little more. I think I have something cool to say that I learned through digging through this very familiar passage. When I first saw that this was the gospel passage of the Bible reading plan for this day, I was a little bit worried because it's so familiar, right? In the beginning was the, and everybody can finish it, and you know how the rhythm goes. What new can be said about this very familiar passage at the beginning of John? Well, it didn't take much digging into the language that John is using to find what I think is an absolutely revolutionary, innovative, and even maybe a bit heretical statements that John is making here at the beginning of his book. So to figure out what this thing is, this revolutionary, explosive thing John is giving to us, we've got to read some ancient Jewish extra-biblical literature. It's the day after New Year's, got to give the people what they want. So ancient Jewish extra-biblical literature it shall be. So we've got the Book of Wisdom of Solomon, not Song of Solomon. That's more of a February 14 kind of read. Pastor jokes. So Wisdom of Solomon, it's extra-biblical, meaning it's not in your pew Bibles, but it was part of the Jewish spiritual tradition. It was part of the literature that they read and considered sacred and spiritual. So Wisdom of Solomon says this: wisdom has been with God since before the creation of the world. Wisdom pervades and embraces everything. Wisdom is the warm, breath of God's power. Wisdom is a mirror that flawlessly reflects God's activity. She is the perfect image of God's goodness. She can do anything. She is one and undivided. She never changes, and yet she makes everything new. She is divine. She is brighter than sunlight, and evil can never overcome her. This other author in the book of Sirach says this. Sirach says, wisdom is with God forever. She has lived with us from ancient times. And in a book that is in your Bible, in Proverbs, wisdom was there when God established the heavens, when he marked out the boundaries of the sea and formed the clouds. Wisdom, this is my paraphrase now, just to sum up this kind of big, long paragraph of what wisdom was to the author of Proverbs. Wisdom is synonymous with life. So there's this tradition amongst the ancient Jewish authors of wisdom, not just being an idea or a concept or an abstract thing, but kind of a person almost, part of God's character. This feminine word, check this word out, chokmah. I know you want to try it. Chokmah. Go ahead, you're in a safe place. Chokmah. Gotta dig deep. Chokmah. So chokmah, wisdom, I think Baruch is our next book here. I'm catching you on the fly up here. Oh, you're right. You keep me on track. So Wisdom of Solomon, the author calls wisdom chokmah, monogenous, monogamous, not monogamous, but monogamous. And that means like unique, one and only. Not monogamous, monogamous. So this is the same word at work later in John, the verse, the chunk of scripture that everybody knows, Jesus being the one and only son, right? The firstborn, the unique, monogamous, unique. And so the author of Wisdom of Solomon says the same thing about wisdom, chokmah. Unique and one and only this wisdom is, emanating from the glory of the Almighty, making the invisible God visible and known. So John is calling his Jewish audience to remember this tradition that they've been sharing with each other for thousands of years about this chokmah, this divine feminine quality of God that is wisdom, that is beauty. It was bigger than just wisdom, which we might assume means like the ability to make wise life choices or something. But actually, in the Jewish spiritual imagination, it was the beauty of God, the joy for life, the knowledge and God-given intelligence to know how to live in the best way, creating the best world we can. That's what this chokmah was. That's what wisdom was, and wisdom was a part of God's person. So John is calling on that tradition, and the audience would have had this called to their memory, because you've heard before about how from little kids you went to school as a Jewish student and you memorized all this literature, so it was ingrained in you, and these patterns and this poetry was part of your everyday life. So John is trusting that his audience knows and remembers all this literature about wisdom, being there from the beginning and with God and creating along with God. But instead, now he's writing in Greek, instead of plugging this word Sophia, which means wisdom in Hebrew, if there's any Sophias or Sophies in the crowd, feel free to use that as ammo later and rub that in somebody's face whenever you need to. Oh, your name's Peter? Well, that means rock. I'm wiser than you and you're thick-headed or something. Use it however you choose. Why didn't he plug this word Sophia in instead of this other word, logos? John chooses this word logos. In the beginning was logos, and I think it's for a very specific purpose. Now, it would be kind of an interesting comparison or analogy to call Jesus the logos, the word, like the building block of language to communicate God's essence in the world, and that's cool. There's something there, but I think John is about something even bigger here. He takes this Jewish tradition of wisdom and he swaps in this other word, logos. And one author says, in our Bibles, we probably shouldn't even translate the word logos to word or whatever. There's not an accurate word that we should plug in there to receive it like the original Jewish audience would have. We should leave it logos. So we should read it like this. In the beginning was the logos, and the logos was with God, and the logos was God. The logos was with God in the beginning, and everything came into being through the logos, and it wouldn't make much sense to us, right? Well, what does this mean? But that's how the Jews would have received it, because to them, all these things are said about wisdom, not about this logos thing. This logos word comes from the Greek spiritual tradition, and, you know, imagine the stereotypical Greek, right? The thinker, he's philosophizing, doing what philosophizers do. He's thinking on the deep questions of life. Is there a meaning to this universe we find ourselves in? Is there a meaning to human life? And if so, what is it? Is the universe at its very core chaotic? Or is there an order, a force that is guiding this ever-changing universe towards more order, more beauty? Well, the most hopeful of those philosophizers said, yes, there is such a force, and that force we call logos. So John here, essentially, is taking all this Jewish poetry, and he's saying, yes, 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 this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about here, this wisdom thing that you all know about. And yes, 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 you Greeks, you are onto something here, and I'm going to mash these two things that don't belong together. He's sticking them together and he's saying, this is what I'm going to talk to you about in my book about what is most important about this man Jesus' life. These Greek philosophers, they had some comparisons, some analogies that they used to try to describe the logos. We can only really talk about God in metaphors, right? And they knew that. So they compared God to fire. They compared God to wind. And why would they choose fire and wind? Well, think back to back in the day, way back then, a couple thousand years ago, at night, you couldn't flip on a switch if there was a bump in the night. If there were unknown things in the dark, how would you go about making them known? You had a torch, you had fire, you had a candle. Does this ring a bell? No one puts their light under a bowl. Instead, you put it on a stand so it will light up the whole house. To the ancient world, fire was the ultimate illuminator because you couldn't flip on a switch. So this was light. This was what brought unknown things into the light to be known. And why wind? Well, wind, pneuma, this is like pneumatic hammer. Pneuma meant wind or breath, and it's not a far stretch to imagine how we could get from breath to life, right? It's the constant pushing and pulling and pushing and pulling of breath that makes you alive and aware and active and able to participate in this life thing, right? So logos was this light for the Greeks, this wind that was life. And so check this out. John 1, verse 4, he just lifts it straight out. He says, what came into being through the logos was just what the Greeks are saying. It was the life and it was the light for some people. I see a few heads shaking. For all people, John says. It was the life and the light for all people. Yeah, that's all good, John, but you're getting a little weird by using this Greek idea of who God is and putting it with our literature, the Jews might say. Yeah, I'm glad that you're incorporating our philosophy and our highfalutin theology, but you really shouldn't be trying to mesh our two traditions, the Greeks might say. These people had nothing in common. They had these sets of ethics, they had worldviews, they had philosophies, they had lifestyles that were not just different, but were completely opposed and often in conflict. And John says, yes, 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 yes. Wisdom, chokmah, you're right, that's valid. That's a picture of God that's moving in the right direction. And yes, logos, life, fire, the pattern of everything that holds it all together, the force that is moving through creation, guiding it towards more order. Yes, that's right, but Christ is bigger. Now, when I say Christ, I'm going to define what I mean, because often I think when we say Christ, it's like Jesus' last name, right? Like Jesus Christ. No, Mary wasn't Mary Christ and Joseph wasn't Joseph Christ. This wasn't his family name. Christ is a title that means something besides just Jesus Christ, the man who lived for 33 years. But the part of the man Jesus that was there at the dawn of time, the part of the man Jesus that is the pattern that holds everything together, the part of the man Jesus that is your life and my life. So when I say the Christ, I'm talking about this Trinitarian flow, this thing that is like the blueprint of the universe. So when I talk about Christ, not just the man Jesus, but the part of the man Jesus that was as big as the universe. He's saying to the Greeks, you're right, you're valid. He's saying to the Jews, you're right, you're valid. But I'm pointing you towards something much, much bigger. I've got these two friends, Andrew Peterson and Caitlin Cuenca, and I met Andrew. There's a picture of them. They're such beautiful people. Look at that. They're two dogs. This is the only moment in recorded history that they were actually like sitting still and being good dogs. Notice they have muzzles because otherwise they're ripping apart everything in sight. So Andrew, I first met him working at summer camp a number of years back, and just about every girl that worked on the staff there had a huge crush on him because he was, am I right? Yeah, yeah. Danny worked there too. She says, yeah, totally. He had this quiet, like, mystery about him, and he's as nice as Jesus. He is so nice and kind-hearted. So, of course, girls were just, I wish he would talk to me. Well, too bad, because he doesn't actually talk. He's so nice and genuine-hearted, pure-hearted. And Caitlin, I first met her up at Walla Walla several years back, and she is this wild little, like, just the craziest little 4 foot nothing, like, tiniest human, but there's so much life and energy in this little person, and it's, there's such a cool combination of people. And here is a photo of Pastor Sam marrying them a few weeks ago. Am I lying? It was the coldest wedding ever. It was in Joshua Tree, because they're weird, and so it was outside, so cold. There was women hiking through Joshua Tree in high heels. I'm surprised we didn't have to take anybody to the hospital. We were freezing to death. But there was people there from all around the country that had come to witness this union because, as somebody had told you, Sam, these two people are like the most genuine Christ-like people that a lot of people know. So these two people just got hitched a couple weeks ago, and this is more of them. That's a little more of like what they, this is their spirits coming out. This is who they are. These two people just got married, and then they boarded a plane to Copenhagen in December, of all things. Like, why? You know, honeymoons are supposed to, you're supposed to be warm. You're supposed to not be suffering on your honeymoon, first off. But they went to Copenhagen in December and biked around and froze their buns off, I'm guessing. But they had a great time because they were together, and that's what they do when they're together. They have an awesome time. But the reason that they bought tickets to Copenhagen wasn't just to get in touch with Andrew's Danish roots, or maybe, I don't know if he's, I'm making things up now, but it wasn't just to go experience this culture, but they bought those plane tickets because it was their cheapest way to get to Europe. And they wanted to go to Europe because, in this photo, this is tiny little 4 foot nothing Caitlin preparing meals for Syrian refugees on the Greek island of Kos. And this is Andrew with his life jacket on and his big warm jacket because they spent time preparing meals, they spent time on the beaches, they spent time helping these refugees that were coming off of boats. They would come in soaking wet, frigid, having left Turkey and traveled across the Mediterranean. They would meet them. They were working with these NGOs to help give them warm clothes, dry clothes, food, help them get registered and get oriented and get on their way. And that's what these two are doing on their honeymoon. And I think they're doing this not just because they're like nice people and they wanted some good Instagram photos or whatever. I think that they're doing this because they know what John is talking about here. They know that in the eyes of these people that are supposed to be different, right? They're different. They're different race. They're a different religion. They're different in so many ways that are supposed to be important. But Andrew and Caitlin see right through it and say, no, the Christ is looking at us through their eyes. And the Christ is looking at them right back through our eyes. They've tapped into this beautiful truth that John is trying to give us here, that the Christ is bigger than our traditions. The Christ is bigger than our distinctions and our lines in the sand. The Christ is the force that is bringing order and beauty and justice and joy in all and through all. So now to chemistry. I talked to our local academy chemistry teacher, Steve McLean, this week, and it's a logical next step, right? Chemistry. And he taught me some stuff that I'm going to try to regurgitate. We'll see if I do a good job. He corrected me a little bit after 9:30. We'll see if it actually stuck. But down at the most basic building blocks of reality, you've got things like quarks. We used to think atoms were the smallest thing, but actually there's tons and tons and tons of things that are smaller than atoms, and they're things like up quarks, down quarks, top quarks, bottom quarks, charm quarks, strange quarks, which I love that the fact that there's these little building blocks of reality that are called strange quarks. Lets me know that there's still scientists that have a sense of humor. And charm quarks. I looked up why a charm quark was named a charm quark and said, it was named on a whim. Okay, good, I'm glad. I'm glad that the building blocks of reality were named on a whim. Charm quarks. These things are all different, and that's why they have different names, and yet they work together to create electrons and protons. And the electrons and protons work together to create atoms like hydrogen and oxygen, and you see one blue dot and one yellow dot for hydrogen because hydrogen has an atomic number of one because it's only got one electron, one proton. Anybody know chemistry? Are we doing all right so far? Woo, sweet. Oxygen has got an atomic number of 8, and it's got 8 of those things that I just said, but I'm not going to try to say again. And so they're different. Hydrogen is much more volatile, so what if oxygen, let's pretend oxygen can think and feel and move about the world to its own volant, it can make its own choices. So what if oxygen were to say, nah, hydrogen's a little too different, and it's a little too volatile, I'm gonna hang out with fluorine, and nitrogen. 7 and 9? Chemistry? Yeah, cool. I'm gonna hang out with these ones, because hydrogen has only got an atomic number of 1. I've got 8. So I'll hang out with my own people. What would happen if that were the case? We wouldn't have, like, 72 hours after rainfall every few years or so to look up at 2-bit and see the green blankets of weeds on the hillside. We couldn't surf or sail or swim. We would be thirsty all the time, and everywhere would look like California in the drought because there would be no water if hydrogen and oxygen didn't put aside their differences and hang out together, making up H2O. We depend on quarks being in relationship to each other. We depend on electrons and protons being in relationship to each other. We depend on atoms being in relationship to each other to make up molecules and ions. We depend on molecules to make tissue, to make organs, to make organisms, to make us. we depend on everything following this flow, this Christ consciousness of being in relationship in spite of difference. But we get to us and we'd rather make jokes about the people that we don't like. Everything else follows this law of you're different, but you gotta be in relationship to each other. But I don't want to be friends with them. But I don't want to be neighbors with them. But I don't want to sit at the same table with them. Let's go to the slide. I'm putting you on the spot here, but can we go to the slide that says, in the beginning was wisdom, in the beginning was logos? The ancient authors said, in the beginning was wisdom. John comes along and says, in the beginning was the logos. And then they say, and wisdom was with God. John says, the logos was with God. And then they say, wisdom made all things in the world. John says, the logos made all things in the world. Wisdom reveals God to all creation. And John says, logos can't watch another GOP debate. What? The logos, there we go. The logos reveals the invisible God to all creation. There is this bigger reality that is larger than our traditions, and it holds us all together. It's the pattern, it's the beauty, it's the wisdom of God. And we need to hear it over and over and over and over and over again, because everything else in the universe gets on board and falls in line with this example that the triune God sets about being in relationship and being in self-giving relationship, self-emptying, self-transcendent relationship. Everything else in the universe gets it, but me and you and us. But what if we did? What if that got into us? What if that got into the way that we saw everything? What if the way that we lived was always as if everything is emanating the glory of God? Because right there is wisdom, right there is chokmah, right there is logos, right there is the life and light of the universe, because God is the one that holds it all together. What if we, like us, like La Sierra, what if we started living that way? It would change everything, I think. It's a simple idea. God's in it. God's in everything, right? It's simple enough. But if we were to practice that, I think it moves outwards in concentric circles and it changes everything it touches. But it doesn't seem realistic, because we've been around for 10,000 years or so, and we still haven't been able to figure it out. You turn on the news and we're still doing the same old things. We're still letting skin-deep differences drive us crazy and kill each other and keep each other out and exclude each other and make each other feel like we have no business being part of the people of God. It seems unrealistic to think that that's even a possibility, for this to become a part of who we are, part of, to change human nature. You turn on the news and our brokenness, our darkness is evident. It's sickness, it's violence. It's violence. It's violence right here in our community. It's violence, it's here in our world between nations. It's violence from ourselves to those that we want to love. Sometimes it's the closest ones to us. It's violence to ourselves as we just keep believing the lies that we're not good enough, or that our darkness controls us. Sometimes it's tempting to believe that it's not realistic, that the darkness has the upper hand. But the ancient Hebrew authors looked around the world and they saw that the world is being torn apart by our tendency to self-destruct. They felt the same thing everyone else felt. Maybe the darkness really is winning this one. But they said, no, 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 no. The darkness cannot defeat wisdom. And John looked around his world and saw that there was a Western global military superpower, not unlike our world today, a Western global military superpower that had its boot on Palestine's neck. He looked around the world and saw that his people, his nation was subjugated to this oppressive rule, and it seemed like darkness was winning this one, but he said, no, 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 no. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not overcome it. And this millennial, who is prone to pessimism and prone to doubting that there really, like, can be a new dawn to this thing, this self-destructive tendency just seems to be so prevalent in me, in us, in our nation, in our politics. And it seems like darkness has the upper hand, but I hear John and I hear those ancient writers and I have to affirm, I have to. The light shines in the darkness and the darkness does not overcome it. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word was with God in the beginning. Everything came into being through the Word, and without the Word, nothing came into being. What came into being through the Word was life, and the life was light for all people. The light shines in the darkness, and darkness does not extinguish, does not overcome the light. Amen.